B-Pod Studios.
All the trolls come out at night.
Right, forgot about that. Shame on me.
It's Adam Jones on the Sports Hub. It's Boston's most listened to afternoon radio program. Vulgar and Mass.
You need a little bit of fat in there for flavor.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Trevor Story, 205, two home runs, 16 runs batted in. High fly ball. That is deep. Backing up Rodriguez. Turning now. She's gone. Trevor Story will touch them all. That was high into the night and one of the deepest parts of Fenway.
Oh,
there's another drive. He sucked this one deep, and she is gone. Trevor Story has tied the game, and he's done it all by himself.
Yes, sir.
His second home run tonight.
One, two,
high drive. He's done it again. Trevor Story clean. And that is what a 7 RBI night looks like right there.
All right, Maz, your turn. Scratch an itch.
Okay, so here you go. Again, Trevor Story. I'm happy he's hitting. I am. I'm not against it. But I would also tell you this doesn't rectify the first 32 games that he played. Last night was game number 33 for Trevor Story. 3 home runs, 7 RBI, 5 runs scored. He had a walk and a stolen base. He did it all. He really was. He was terrific in that game. It was as comprehensive a performance as you will ever see. 1 out of 162. So the other 32 still weigh more to me. Here's another one I'll give you, and I'm sorry. I hate to do this, but it is what it is. He's got 5 home runs this year. One of them is on a fastball.
I was going to ask you, what pitches was he hitting last
okay,
night?
Okay, so last night he hit a fastball the first time up. It was 94 miles an hour, and he belted it into the TV stand in left center field there over the 379 mark. So he got on a fastball there. First time. The other home runs last night, both changeups. The two prior to that this year, changeup and a 79-mile-an-hour slider.
Why do you guys throw him changeups?
Because they're stupid. Stupid. So again, and Youkilis even said this on the broadcast, and I've been lamenting this one for years. A right-hander throwing a right-hander a changeup is a dangerous pitch. Pedro Martinez could pull it off in his prime because he had a changeup that was ridiculous. He could bend the thing around your ear and come out the other side and right back at himself for crying out loud. It was unique. But the typical pitcher only will throw a changeup, or should, to a guy batting from the opposite side. A righty throws it against a left-handed batter because it'll move away from him. Away. If you throw into a righty as a right-handed pitcher and you hang it, it will get freaking pulverized. It will get hit into Kenmore Square, which is what happened last night. So I don't know why they do it. Story can hit left-handed pitching. That we know, and one of his homers last night was off a lefty. So soft stuff, something from a left-hander, he's fine. He still hasn't totally convinced me that he can do it consistently against righties or against velocity. So I need to see it. And I'll ask the same question I asked earlier. If you're a Red Sox fan and you like Xander Bogaerts, and I can't imagine you don't you have to root against Story? Don't you have to look at it and go, if this guy plays well, that just empowers the organization.
What if you just care about the Red Sox and not Xander Bogaerts? What if I'm just playing devil's advocate here, right?
Sure. Then you're happy.
I'm facilitating here. Well, what if they nailed it? What if Xander Bogaerts isn't worth the money? They found the next guy at a better contract, at a better age, that's going to produce just as much, and the Red Sox will be better off.
Well, they might be right.
And that's going to be the narrative. I mean, at least those that especially love the front office and how Heimblum runs this team, they've already tried to spin it that way.
Yeah, the conundrum for me, though, is endorsing the financial approach. That's the conundrum.
What if the financial approach is sound?
Okay, but is it?
I don't believe so. I'm just, again, facilitating.
Okay, so again, look, if they start winning World Series, then no one's going to care. I mean, as long as they win and they're fine. What I don't like is the whole we want to compete for championships every year. The Bruins did that for 35 years. They competed for them. They didn't win them.
Small c.
Right, but they competed for them. So is that what we're in for now? Like, and again, I'm making a jump there, okay? But even so, I just think that sometimes in sports, regardless of the sport, you got to go a little bit further, lose a trade to win a championship. And that means you've got to sacrifice a little of the long term to do it. I don't know if they were willing to do that anymore. But that aside, big night for Trevor Story, but let's not make it anything other than a big night. It's got to be more than that for him to work.
Okay, back to your calls on everything Agenda Free Friday. Here's Lewis in Providence with a baseball thought from Maz. Go ahead, Lewis.
Hey, Maz, I got a question. Do you think Yadier Molina is a first ballot Hall of Famer, or who was better, Yadier Molina or Pudge defensively? Thank you. I hang up.
So I would go with Yadier Molina defensively.
I got a lot of respect for that guy.
Yeah, he's tremendous, tremendous player.
I mean, gamer,
yeah.
Winner.
Yeah.
I think he's the
leader,
balls.
All of it.
He's the best.
Yeah, he is. There's a lot to like there. I'm inclined to say yes at a position like that. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I've done some sort of deep dive on the numbers.
I don't know what his numbers are.
Me neither.
But
I love what he represents.
I've watched a ton of games against him with the Brewers. Well, he's just, I think, I fear him.
He's elite behind the plate. And again, Pudge was great at throwing out base stealers. Pudge wasn't a great game caller. Pudge wasn't invested in the staff and the defense the way that this guy is. Like, to me, I take Molina over Pudge, 7 days a week.
Lucas and Barnstable. Go ahead, Lucas.
Hey, guys. How's it going? I wanted to come back to the point that, Tony, you were making and how we should be almost rooting against Trevor Story if we want leverage on re-signing Xander. And I think that, we could pretty much kiss Xander goodbye. There's no way Chaim Bloom is going to pay the big contract that he's going to need to come back into Boston.
Do you think that's true, Mess?
I'm not totally convinced yet.
Yeah, so you don't think the Bogarts thing is dead?
I don't think it's dead. I mean, if you're asking me to bet right now, I'm betting that he's gone. Do I think it could flip? Sure. I always think that stuff can flip at the last minute. But I would also tell you, if they wanted to pay Bogarts, they probably would have paid him already.
I mean, to me, the worst part of it is, I mean, look, the nerds are often right. And maybe Trevor Story, at his age, at his contracts, a better bet than signing Bogarts at what it would take to sign him. Maybe the analysis is right, as it often is. But that doesn't mean it's more interesting or makes me like the team any better. Xander Bogaerts is a Red Sox, and he represents the team, and he's everything you want in the head of your franchise. He wants to be here. He likes it here. The fans like him. He represents the team perfectly. He wins. He produces. That guy should be a Red Sox for life. That should be a guy you should sign. That's a guy that you can root for and you should root for, and he should be here. Whether the numbers all line up or not, and I don't think they think that way. It's pure spreadsheet.
Yeah, everything is spreadsheet now, which is why the product sucks. Again, let's look at Nick Pivetta the other night. Why did they let him pitch a complete game? I mean, I think because they were up big and it just lined up that way. But it never happens anymore. Matt McCarthy asked me a good question last night, just quickly. The most memorable baseball games you have that you've either seen in person, or how many of them involved a great pitching performance?
Oh, I mean, it's my number one. Pedro Martinez against the Atlanta Braves here. It was like a Saturday in 99. I think he struck out 16 guys. The place was insane. People were booing groundouts. It's the best baseball game I've ever been to.
I mean, to me, there were almost always, I saw this guy when he struck out 17. I saw so-and-so's perfect game. I saw this. I saw that. You know, now there are a few. I saw a 3-homer, 10 RBI game that I remember, 2 grand slams, blah, blah, blah. That was Garcia Parra. But the most of them are pitchers. And now they don't let pitchers go past the fifth inning anymore. Great job selling your products. Great job. No, really, excellent. Give me the one thing I want to see and cut it in half.
Jeff in West Roxbury has a basketball thought. Go ahead, Jeff.
What's going on, boys? I think the Miami Heat are in big, big trouble here. They've won now only one single quarter over the past 2 games.
Oh,
okay,
God.
So what does that mean? That means I've watched 7 out of the last 8 with my pants wrapped around my ankles. This offense is not explosive enough to beat an elite Celtics defense. There you go. There's my take. Enjoy your weekend.
Okay, the second part, I think you're right. The Heat can't. The Heat's offense is not explosive enough to do damage against the Celtics defense. Fair analysis. Agreed. It'll probably come down to that. Agreed. The fact that you've only lost one quarter, I don't think means anything.
What's this, the college hockey playoffs? We're doing total goals now?
Yeah, aggregate, yeah.
Yeah, is that what it is? No, that's what we're doing? I'll go pound Sam with the 7 quarters. You can take your 7 quarters and shove them. I hate that. I hate that type of analysis.
It just doesn't work that way. If you have a hot quarter and go on a big run, that can be the ball game. That's the way the sport works.
Right, because one affects the other within the context of one game. So the third quarter rendered the fourth meaningless in the first game.
Make the shirt. Most quarters won. Yeah.
We continue with your thoughts on an agenda-free Friday. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Oh, he is a manipulative weasel.
And Matt.
He does himself no service by actually talking.
You've got to listen to believe.
It's about me.
Yes, absolutely.
It's about me.
No question.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Can you sit here and say that you would want Cassidy back?
I think we have to look at making some changes as far as how we play and the way we do some of the things. I think Bruce is a fantastic coach. I mean, he's brought a lot of success to this organization. I like him as a coach, so we'll see where it goes. But I do think we need to make some changes, and I think Bruce a couple days ago alluded to that. So we'll see where that goes.
Can you sit here and say that you would?
Dig. So there's some pretty compelling Bruin stuff on the board as well. I think Cassidy's walking the plank. And if he goes into the year, it's a recipe for disaster. Recipe for disaster. They did this. They do this with a lot of coaches, but they did it with Pat Burns. You know, Pat Burns came in here and had a real impact the first couple of years. In some ways, similar to Cassidy, he rode the guys hard. He was a no BS kind of guy, and sort of turned things around. And it got a little stale. And I said, okay, we'll bring him back for the next year. And they fired him. You know. Soon into his third or fourth year, I can't remember. It replaced him with Mike Keenan. That's a real stable move there. But, you know, once you sort of question him in the offseason and say changes have to be made in how he coaches, it's over. Do you remember, not to cross sports, but sorry, Pete Carroll, you know, in the first couple of years, Pete Carroll obviously had this reputation, Pete the Poodle, being too soft on the players, country club atmosphere, which is absolutely true. You know, guys are showing up late, not showing up at all, getting into bar fights, jumping off of stages at Rock. You know what? It was a Club Med, Animal House. And Pete was really soft on the guy. So you got to toughen up, Pete. You got to toughen up. And then that third year, he tried to be all tough. I was like, this is a joke. Yeah, tough, you know. So like he tries to be something that he's not. Or he's put on notice. You try and do something that you're not, and it never works, ever. So is Neely talking stylistically with Bruce Cassidy? You got to go easy on the players. They're tuning you out. Well, that's not going to work. If they've tuned you out, they've tuned you out. If you turn to Mr. Nice Guy, that's not going to work. Well, is it more on the ice? Fluto and others have written about this. There's a divide, or what I think Neely's talking about, again, if you read Fluto, is stylistically how they play. Read Fluto in The Athletic if you want a deep dive on it. It's a little wonky in terms of X's and O's and how they play, but it boils down to this, that they're not getting enough offense out of their defensemen, and they're not gaining the zone enough and playing high to low, sort of like Carolina does, where a lot of their offense comes with the defense, sort of either shots or tips or, you know, just high to low sort of stuff. The Bruins are too much trying to play off the rush. And Neely mentioned that, too, on the power play, how he noticed how they always tried to gain the blue line on the power play instead of just dumping it in. And we all noticed that. I mean, it was dysfunctional. It was ridiculous how often they just tried to finesse it over the blue line versus chucking it deep and going and getting it. But anyway, that's part of what this whole divide is, that Neely and Sweeney want the Bruins to play more high to low, more traditionally, get the puck into the zone, work it out, get it back to your D, deflections, screens, play that way and play better below the dots and do it that way, where the Bruins have tried to be more of a rush team playing off the rush using their speed. And now there's a divide over how Cassidy wants to play and how the front office wants to play. And you know what I think about that? I mean, it's all a big steaming pile of bullcrap. When they fired Julian, do you remember what they said?
Yeah, the opposite.
We play too much high to low. Our offense is too predictable. We too often just try and get it back to the blue line, hope for a screen, hope for the game is becoming speed. You have to play through the neutral zone off the rush. You have to play with that style. And so that's why they went to Casty in the first place. And now it's sort of hit a wall, largely because the personnel is come up short. The drafting blows, and the roster's not good enough. But suddenly, the same two managers say, you know what? Now we want, there's too much off the rush. That's too much to ask for. You can't play off the rush. That's too high. In a perfect world, yeah, you can play off the rush, but you got to get it in low and work it back to the D and play that way. It's all a bunch of bullcrap. It's all the managers covering their ass, throwing the coach under the bus. I've seen it a million times before, and it's what's happening now.
Yeah, to me, the biggest problem is the roster. The biggest problem to me is the roster.
Right. So again, so how are guys like Urho Vaakanainen or Trent Frederick or John Beecher the problem of the coach? How is that Cassidy's issue?
They're not, Murray. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, I mean, go name any stiff. You know, yeah, he nailed Charlie McAvoy. But outside of that, like, it's a lot of misses. And so the roster is not really the problem of the coach. It's the problem of the GM. That's the guy who should be gone.
I mean, come on. They're soft. There's a reason why they don't play below the dots, because they're soft. Their roster is soft.
And their defensemen blow. You want to work it back to Josh Brown? What? You want to work it back to Derek Forbort and Connor Clifton? Why? I'm not working it back to that guy. He sucks. So, look, I think there's a case to be made that no one gets blown out. Like, because I'm not as down on Sweeney or Cassie or any of this as a lot of people are. So if it's all status quo and they're all on the same page, fine. I'm okay with that. I'm okay if they blow the whole thing up. Like, I think it's a close call there. What I am absolutely against is the finger pointing between the managers and the coach. But you're all in it together. You've all effed up. And I think the managers have effed up worse than the coach. So if I were a manager, if I were Sweeney or Neely, I'd put a sock in the high to low thing. When you left Matthew Barzal on the board for three straight picks, I'd ixnay on, I don't like how we play. Jesus, when you gave Charlie Coyle that contract, and I liked it too, so I'm wrong too, but be that as it may, when you signed Matt Bolesky and David Backus and now Charlie Coyle this deal, I'd put a sock in, I don't like how we enter the zone. Because that's not really the problem. The problem is the roster. But you're all in it together. So if Neely and Sweeney had come out and said, we've all made mistakes, we all need to be better, all the way around, and we're all going to, you know, circle back and do everything we can to make it better, fine, and they kept everybody, I would be okay with it, because I don't think Sweeney's been the abject disaster that everybody else does, and I think Cassidy's actually pretty good. So if you want to keep it all, fine. But the finger pointing, no. If you, now you're going to take sides, I'm taking sides. And you sign like a jackass. Sorry, Don, Cam. When you leave Matthew Barzal on the board for three straight picks and then complain about your coach's zone entries. That, I'm sorry, that misses the mark. Back to your phones. Okay, I get that off my chest, too. God, thank God it's a Friday.
Third down.
Shukri in Brookline. Go ahead, Shukri.
Man, you got me so fired up right now that it's not even fun. I've been stewing on this for 24 hours, and I'm going to say this blankly. Cam Neely is the ultimate man what's in Boston right now. Like, seriously, hearing that yesterday really got me fired up. And I was saying to myself, you're really putting this on Cassidy? Really? Your right-hand man and Don Sweeney can't draft. Like, what are we doing here? Like, I mean, seriously, you wanna understand why the team is currently in the seat that they're in? Look at the drafting. Look at the roster construction. It's not a coincidence.
It's not a coincidence, Shukri. With a different style or better coaching, could it be better on the margins? Yes, it could be better on the margins. It's not a championship roster. So I don't know what they're expecting.
They don't have the horses. You know, and as you said it too, like, I don't know why it didn't occur to me in these terms. They suck at the forecheck. That used to be their thing. Remember that? But they do. They suck at the forecheck. They suck at it.
I wonder, is that coaching?
It's largely personnel.
Andrew and Taunton on the Celts. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, guys. How's it going? I just wish, like, Marcus Smart would just be, like, more humble. But I think he does do a lot of the stuff he says. But, like, the last three games, he's got like 29 assists and three turnovers. I think he really does help with the facilitation. And obviously on the defensive end, having him and Horford back was huge. I totally get what you're saying about them being like hot shooters and how that's like a big like a big impact. Although I do think the defense is important, because if you look at the, like the games they've won in the playoffs, when they hit the threes at that clip, they win going away. Like the game's over at halftime, or they blow the team out by 25. The difference is the defense keeps them in the game. When they're not making the threes, they it can keep them in the game, and like maybe they lose by one or
sure.
two or win by one or two. But
Andrew, let me stop you. I'm not telling you they're not a great defensive team. It's not important. Of course it is. I'm telling you, I think it starts with a three-point shooting on a night like last night. That's where it started. The number that jumps out is 9 of 11. There's no defensive number that jumps out. You've had, and they were good defensive numbers. But they're not like, oh, my God. The oh, my God number is 9 of 11. The oh, my God number is 50% from behind the line. That's the aberration. And I don't mean it's an aberration, so that's the wrong word. Because
that's the variable.
That's the variable. Thank you. Because it's no longer an aberration when you are winning big playoff game after big playoff game by having some insane quarter or half from behind the line. It's no longer an aberration. I just think that's where it's starting. That's all. Warren in Lowell. Go ahead, Warren.
Hi, how you doing? I was wondering, can you compare Marcus Smart to like Dennis Rodman now of like the Chicago Bulls
no.
era?
No.
No.
No. He's. Why are you laughing?
Because, like, this all of a sudden now we want to turn Smart into some sort of historic figure. And not that Dennis Rodman was like this, you know, great, ridiculous player, but it's just like.
No, he's your Draymond Green.
That's a good analogy.
Robin was a one trick pony. He did one thing.
Rebound and play defense.
Yeah. Marcus Smart does a lot more than Dennis Rodman, but what?
No, it just cracks me up. Like,
no, all of a sudden, he's Earl the Pearl Monroe.
Yeah. It's 1-1. The series is 1-1. Would you people slow down? Holy crap, you didn't win anything yet. They played well last night. Yes, they answered. Like, I like it too. Don't get me wrong. I'm glad it's a series. But it's not like this. All of a sudden, it's over? Like, now we're going to play. Yeah, what should we? Where do we put Smart in the pantheon? He's not in any pantheon yet. It's 1-1. You got to win a title first.
Here's Big Jim Murray with an update. We're right back.
Jesus.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The best analysis.
Forget about what's being said. Everyone's ripping someone for something somewhere.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Where do you stand on an extension for Don?
I started talking with Charlie and Mr. Jacobs after the deadline about extending Don. So that's my plan is to do that.
Is it their plan as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it just a matter of crossing the T's and dotting the I's?
Well, I'm going to sit down with Don next day or two and hopefully hammer something out.
Is there a reason why it's lasted this long?
To be honest, I really wanted to see how the year went. We had a lot of changes last offseason. So I just really wanted to see how that played out. Obviously, you get January, February, March, really good months for us. The team really came together. I thought we had a lot of depth. And I was happy with what he did at the deadline.
A line that stuck out there was, I really wanted to see how the year went. I think the year went poorly. Most people are unhappy with the year. But somehow, the management is happy enough with the year that the GM stays and the coach gets put on the hot seat. All right.
Just quick, the thing that doesn't make sense, though, so if they were wavering, and I would think they were wavering because they would have extended Sweeney at some point in the season or before it was over, I would think, means you're wavering. So if you're wavering, doesn't that mean you're thinking about maybe moving on or
yes.
finding someone else?
Or somebody is, ownership or whoever. So if you read it the way that Neely said it, the Lindholm deal saved them. I mean, what else could it be?
And I don't think it was that. I mean, I like the deal, but it wasn't. This wasn't Esposito for Brad Park. It wasn't some sort of theft of Barry Peterson for Cam Neely. There was a big cost. And you were the only team willing to meet it. You sent what amounted to 2 first-round picks. Vaakanainen was a recent first-round pick, so treat him as a recent first-round pick. It was a first, Vaakanainen, and 2 seconds. And then also involved, I'm sure, was the contract extension. You had to be the team that was willing to go to eight times eight, whatever it was. And so Jiro Vaakanainen, Lindholm, wouldn't have, you know, so that was a component to it. So you didn't outsmart anyone. You were just, there was a massive price tag and you were the one willing to meet it. Well, there really wasn't that genius of a move.
No. Look, again, so it was 6.5, right? Eight times 6.5, so $52 million, I think it was. I mean, it was big money. And I would tell you, too, that, like, I don't know, the big thing to me with Sweeney is you've had to go out and sign Taylor Hall now to a big deal, sign Lindholm to a big deal after giving up prospects to get him because you don't have anything in your system.
It's just gutless how they're handling it because they were thinking about it, but what, you're essentially continuing to sleep with him because it's convenient? Yeah, he's always there. Yeah, we like it. I guess we know him enough, so let's stick with him.
They should fire Cassidy now.
Or he should say, fire me.
Well, right, and I say that as much for Cassidy's benefit as I do for the Bruins.
The whole thing is we're keeping the coach, but we're going to make him change what he does.
It's not going to work.
Never does.
No, it's not going to work.
And he'll just be pissed, yeah.
No, and this is why I say, and look, and I also wonder about, you know, maybe they're hearing some grumbling from the locker room. I have no idea if they are or they aren't. But the DeBrus thing, you want to throw that one out, fine. Riley, it feels like there was some friction there, too. Bergeron, I don't know. Was there or wasn't there? So, like, and I can see where Cassidy would wear people out. I like the guy, too. But from day one, we have said sooner or later, this guy's going to wear him out.
Did you have something, Jimmy?
My question would be maybe Cam wanted somebody else and that somebody else wasn't available. We speculated on Jeff Gorton in Montreal. Maybe they didn't want to buy him out of Montreal, or maybe there was somebody else out there.
So that's what you believe?
That's what I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anything. Unlike you guys, I get nothing. That was just my instinct at first. The only reason you wait is to see if there was something better on the table. You had something in your back pocket. And if that fell through, then you stay the course. And so that makes perfect sense to me.
Well, that's great. Honey, I want to leave you, but she's staying with her husband. Terrific.
It's kind of like that.
That's just great.
It's called Bruin. Here's Cole in Worcester on the Celtics. Go ahead, Cole.
Selger, you're 100% correct. I don't understand why people don't want to just say, we got hot shooting. And that's what won last night. Listen to this stat. Both teams in the first half took the same exact amount of threes. We both took 19. They hit 6. We hit 12. That's an 18-point difference without taking one extra shot. No team can overcome that. That's why we won.
Yeah, and your defense is great. It's still great. And when you put the league as a 3-and-D league, it's both. So I don't know why that would be a point of sensitivity to you.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because when you say they got hot shooting, it implies that it was just a one-off.
Right, and I agree. That's why. That's how it plays. But it's no longer a one-off because you do this every third night.
That's right. This is what the league is now.
But it's what you are, and you do it exceptionally well.
Yeah, right. No, they built themselves in the image of Golden State, what Golden State was 5 years ago. That's what they wanted to be.
So it turns out we were wrong with that sustainability thing. Like, you think of it every game right. in, game out.
Yes.
Can they be sustainable for 4 out of 7? Turns out they probably can.
Yes. Right. That's I was wrong about it's not sustainable. It is. It is. This is how they're winning. They're doing it. Like, I'm not that guy that when the results go against a take, I say, all right, I'm wrong. It is sustainable. But don't tell me it's something else. They shot the lights out in game 2 against the Bucks. They won. They shot 98 three-pointers in game 6 and 7 against the Bucks, and they won. Al Horford played out of his boobs. 5 of 7, I think, from behind the line. He won you that game. You were 9 of 11 last night in the first quarter from behind the line, 82%. So you do it. You can do it. It's happening. It is sustainable. You have that many guys, that many good shooters, that you're going to get hot for a time and it's going to carry you. And that's what's happening.
I mean, it's amazing to me, really. Again, it's amazing. Because if you were to say to me that the Celtics have an elite shooter, I would say no.
Although, I disagree.
Elite?
I think Tatum and Brown are elite shooters.
Maybe.
Brown hits some three-pointers where I don't even think he really hits the net. He elevates and gets such arc on it. It goes through so purely that the net barely moves. I think Tatum and Brown are elite shooters. I think guys like,
I mean, Grant Williams might be an elite shooter now.
Horford can shoot the ball whenever he wants, as far as I'm concerned. I think he's an excellent shooter. I think Peyton Pritchard is an excellent shooter. And I think guys who aren't excellent shooters hit. I think Marcus Smart hits from a, you know, at least enough to justify his attempts. So to me, that's it. You nailed the 3-and-D.
I know, and I guess I'm hung up on the numbers. Like, if I look up Brown and look up Tatum, it's 35%, 37%. But the fact is, they can make it any time from just about anywhere.
Any quarter, any given half, they're liable to go 6 of 8 and just torch you and leave you in the dust.
It's just, but you understand what I'm saying? There's no Steph Curry out there. There's no Klay Thompson out there. There's no 44, 45% guy. There's no J.J. Redick. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They don't have that guy. They don't have that pure sniper, Kyle Korver. Like, they don't have him. And yet they just keep burying people. It's unbelievable.
Long commercial-free segment comes next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Do you believe in moral victories? A good loss? We'll get them next time.
No silver linings here on Felger and Mez.
Then you are in the wrong place.
You have to accept that, so we...
Felger and Mez on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Will you also be calling plays this year, Joe? Is that part of the plan for you?
Look, I'll tell you directly and honestly right now, nothing's been declared or decided or voiced to, you know, me. I know Matt's going to be the other one who gets asked, or Nick Haley. So look, right now we're all just working. Like I said, it's mostly drills and skills. We're working offensively. I do think it's critical for every coach on the offense to understand the game plan and be prepared as a play caller. If you're not really looking and approaching the game as a play caller, I think it's tough to really teach the game plan, if that makes sense to you. And I've always approached it when I was, you know, Scotty O's assistant on special teams. You know, you come to work every day, and if his car ain't there, you got to get ready to go to work and start calling. So that's the way I've kind of learned it and got ready for it. And that's the way I'll approach every day. In terms of, you know, who calls plays, to be honest with you, that's not the main focus of us right now as an offensive staff. When coach wants us to go ahead and declare a role like that, he'll tell us.
Okay, Agenda Free Friday, everything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to. This continues to be a big story, what Belichick is doing with his coaching staff. And the thing this week, he finally made Judge and Patricia available and dinked around with the requirements from the league to make his assistants available twice in the offseason. So he put them on back-to-back days right after Game 7 of the Celtics' big playoff win. And so both Judge and Patricia spoke Monday and then Tuesday in Bill's effort to skirt the rules, which I guess he successfully did because their second day of media availability was rendered mostly useless. But either way, we got enough to know that Judge is probably working with the quarterbacks. Patricia's on the offensive line. These guys are prominent voices on the offense, and this is who you've turned your offensive coaching and the offensive unit and your young quarterback over to. And it's kind of gross.
Oh, you mean you don't like it?
I really don't like it. So anyway, they tried to bury him on by going back-to-back Monday, Tuesday.
So weak.
So big, big weasel move. But be that as it may, we're still going to hammer him for it. So I want to play you a cut from Joe Judge that happened on Tuesday. So we all ignored the Tuesday availabilities because why would we?
Heard from him yesterday.
We heard from him on Monday. Right. Nothing happened between Monday and Tuesday, so there's nothing new to ask. There's nowhere to go. I didn't pay attention to him. So I didn't go back and listen to Tuesday's availabilities, but Jim McBride in the Globe did write something off of the second day with Joe Judge, something to do with injuries on special teams. And I read these quotes. I said, you've got to be kidding me. So I haven't heard the sound yet. This is a 3-minute clip. I'm sorry. I didn't go through it. But get a load of this freaking chooch. Here's Joe Judge asked or talking about injuries on special teams. Go ahead.
So I want to ask you about special teams. In February, the competition committee announced that they were seeking input from coaches about how to cut down on injuries on punt returns. And I'm wondering if you were one of those coaches or what your thoughts were on maybe being able to cut down.
Stop. So first of all, who is that asking the question? Do we know?
Jim McBride.
That was McBride.
Yeah, it was McBride. Yeah, that's definitely Jimmy McBride.
So I'm sorry, Jim. I don't mean to. But what a planted question. Who has ever, in the history of this planet, thought to ask this question about the competition committee with injuries to special teamers? And have you had a role in that? So this is a setup. They want Joe Judge or someone on the Patriots staff wanted Joe Judge to talk about this.
Correct.
So there's the question, which is so far off the grid, I don't even know where to begin with that.
Because they wanted to kill 3 minutes. That's why.
Right, that's all it is.
Jesus. Listen to Judge's answer on this.
Yeah, I think first off, there's nothing more important than the health and safety of the players. So we always do everything with that in mind as we coach. You know, that's a conversation that started a couple of years ago, honestly. And, you know, last year, sitting through some, you know, league meetings and different things, one of the things that came out, you know, they're reflecting where the injuries occurred with the punt returns and what are some of the common denominators were. And one thing that was identified was the body position down the field. And I think that, you know, something we've done around here a long time is working the body position, you know, in all phases of football, but especially in the special teams, when you're in that really full speed aspect, all right, because it's more of a space down the field. And what was identified was the majority of the ACL injuries specifically, you know, came when the ligaments were stretched outside the body. So if you can imagine somebody with just a wide base really outside each other, almost like kind of baby deer stance, if you would.
So what was that? Baby deer stance?
Baby deer, yeah.
Baby deer stance.
Yeah, like a rookie on the Milwaukee Bucks, a baby deer.
Baby deer, a doe, if you will.
When the ligaments were stretched outside the body. So if you can imagine somebody with just a wide base really outside each other, almost like kind of baby deer stance, if you would.
Got it.
You know, we've been working technique here for years. We call it scallop. And scallop's really just a vertical shuffle where you're...
Stop.
Scallop? Scallop?
Scalp?
Scallop?
Grilled?
I think he said scalp.
Scallop.
Scallop.
Big scallops.
Like with butter and garlic sauce.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Like
a little side of couscous. Correct. Scallop.
Got it. Like a grilled scallop.
Scallop.
Got it. Like scallop potatoes.
Scallop.
Scallop.
Go ahead.
You know, we've been working technique here for years. We call it scallop. And scallop's really just a vertical shuffle where you're playing full speed to game speed. Game speed we declare as, you know, that necessary speed to play within phase and be able to adjust in short space and track movement, you know, and make a hit. And we talk about game speed being the necessary speed. Again, we always use the example of the bull and the matador, right? The bull's.
So I'm sorry, what was that?
Yes, the bull and the matador. No, this is a good one.
Olé!
So,
an event where I'm always rooting for the bull.
We started with the baby deer stance.
Yes.
So,
yeah, wide base.
Okay.
Wide base, like this.
Oh, no, I thought like baby deer almost on its hind legs, so you know, it's like...
I thought like just sort of like gangly, like just out of the womb.
Yeah, no, like you're afraid to stand up, so...
Go ahead, Jim. I'm sorry,
I think it's more like up in its... Like,
no, more like this. Because you're afraid you're going to fall, so you spread out. You want to make sure, like the ground's moving, I'm going to spread out my leg. Like on a train, the thing starts moving, you grab you like this.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what the baby deer stance is.
What's the scallop technique?
I'm not quite sure.
I have no, like, I can't even begin to guess what that means.
I like them grilled.
But do the scallops?
No, okay, do scallops move along the ocean floor in a very sort of deliberate, mushy sort of like?
No, they're in a shell, no.
So what is the scallop technique?
I don't know.
Okay, get back to the bull and the matador,
please. It's like a
please.
Shuffle. It's a Hold shuffle on. Where your legs don't extend outside your shoulders.
We're now, what's that now?
I'm guessing. You said something, because I think you're doing some sort of shuffle where you don't have your legs out here, so you're shuffling like this. So that you don't, that's
a good
guess.
Shuffle, man.
Well, you don't want your legs outside your shoulders, because that's how you avoid, you can avoid ACL injuries.
We teach the scallop technique.
Correct.
Here. Okay, Joe Judge or Bill Belichick, someone there in Foxborough wanted this guy to talk about the scallop technique.
Yes.
Okay, we'll get back to the bull and the matador, please.
Yeah, go.
The bull and the matador, right? The bull's going 100 miles an hour. The matador stands still. He steps out of the way. Bull goes flying right by. So you have to be more controlled to hit something and not just go ahead full speed, run on by.
Right.
The scallop technique really works on going from that full speed.
So hold on. The scallop technique.
Oh, so now he's telling us I might be wrong.
The scallop technique addresses the bull and the matador syndrome. Go ahead.
I guess, no, it's like Top Gun. You let the jet fly right by.
Let's hear it.
Go.
So keeping your feet under you as a base and keeping your feet moving. And really the technique we worked for years, okay, in terms of making us more effective is really what's making us a lot safer too. So when you talk about some of the significant injuries they're focusing on in that phase, you know, one of which is the ACL injuries. Oh, and, you know, for us, it comes down to the coaching of the technique. One of the techniques that we implement is a scallop. We use that on really all three phases, but especially on defense and in a kicking game for our defenders and our guys covering kicks. To adjust and go make
okay,
a hit.
Okay, stop. I can't take it. They're porked. They're porked. They're porked. I
you know, the other part is a lot of it comes down to, you know, playing within yourself within the rules.
Okay, stop. I can't take
God.
It. So
you know he loves the rules.
Another minute of the scallop technique, and the bull and the matador.
I just Googled it.
And the baby deer scallop technique?
Yeah, I did, yes.
What is it? Give it to us. Give us a demonstration.
As the ball carrier squares his shoulders to threaten a cutback, scallop is defined as a shuffle while continuing to close on the ball carrier with your near leg and near shoulder. So it's something like...
I can't even visualize it.
I can. Something like this. No, I'm serious. Yeah.
That's it. No, you're right. You're so right. Let's see it again. Okay. You actually did that well.
No, it's like this. So you don't let your legs get way outside. So
scalp technique.
Yeah, you don't want to hurt those ACLs.
They're so porked.
That was well demonstrated.
They're so porked. They're so porked. Do you get this?
I'm a good student.
This freaking chooch, this guy, this coach, he wanted to... So they set up poor McBride to ask this, I mean, just ridiculous
question. When you see a guy down the field running full speed and they get overextended, you know, that's really when they can't plant and redirect. And a lot of that comes
can you imagine being in the meeting room with this guy? He's teaching the scallop technique and don't be the bull and the matador or the baby deer. You want to be a scallop?
Scallop.
Talking your face off about the scallop technique? And this is the guy. Is there any wonder what happened in New York happened in New York? Any surprise if this thing goes belly up this year? Is going to be any surprise about why this happened? Not only this effluvium of nonsense, this nonsense that this guy spewed for 3.5 minutes about the freaking bull and the matador. He wanted it out there. He had to set up a reporter to ask him because he was so horny to put it on the record and let everybody know about his work with the injuries and special teams and the scallop technique.
No, this is how exceptional a coach he is. They want everyone to know how good of a coach he is. That's why they had it out there.
Oh, my God.
That scallop technique, which I can do.
Yeah, I can attest to that, Maz. I think you nailed it.
Oh, no, I got it.
I think that's exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, I think we should send the film down to Foxborough and see if we get it right.
All right, we just had to get that off our chest
blocks
as well.
Backs, really specifically that low hip contact.
Thank you.
It kind of pushes the runner's hips forward.
Jesus.
And they can't play with their feet under to decelerate and then change direction. So
he kept going.
Yeah.
He'd still be going if the conference called it an end.
45 seconds left.
They wanted
really playing within the techniques. The safety comes from how we're teaching the fundamental techniques and all.
He wanted a third day to discuss the crustacean technique.
Yeah, the scallop technique. Yeah. It's funny because when I played, we used the clam.
Yeah, listen, everything we do is with player safety in mind. Obviously, special teams.
Okay, so there's that. We had to get to that. That had to see the air. We got 90 seconds for an update, no commercials, and we're right back with you.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.